The history that we were all taught growing up is wrong. My name is Scott Wolter, and I'm a forensic geologist. There's a hidden history that nobody knows about. There are pyramids, chambers, tombs, inscriptions. They're all over the world. We're going to investigate these artifacts and sites, and we're going to get to the truth. Sometimes history isn't what we've been told. Dear Scott, my name is Paul, and I live near Tucson, Arizona. While hiking in the Mustang Mountains, my friends and I came across a cave. There's Native American rock art inside, but that's not why I'm writing. There's a stone with a mysterious inscription outside the cave. I think it's a message written in runes. I know you've done a lot of work with rune stones, and I'd like your help figuring out how old the stone is and what it says. Hey, Paul? Yeah, this is Scott Wolter. Say, I got your letter and I'm looking at these pictures. I want to see this stone.
Hey, Scott.
That was a hell of a ride. How did you guys find this place?
Oh, the story starts with me, I guess. I was over in the other side of the valley in Elgin, and there was an old guy that was a retired rancher, and he said, you know, over there's the Mustang Mountains. And he said, when I was a kid, they said there was a lost archaeological site over there that's long since been gone missing.
Okay.
And that was, what, two years ago?
2 years ago.
Well, actually, what we were doing is we were looking for places to climb. Okay. So we had our climbing gear on, and just so happened that one day, we come around over to this wall here. I said to Paul, well, Paul, let's take our gear off, and we'll see if there's any places to climb. As I was walking in, man, Paul, look at this. And Paul was amazed, and he said, man, this place is great.
Actually, look, I think he's being polite. He disappeared in this cave, and all I heard was, oh, sh**. That was what you said.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, and Paul comes in there and he's looking.
He says, what do you think this is? I says, looks like an archaeology site to me. I says, look at all these markings on the wall here.
There were petroglyphs and pictographs, you know, the finger paintings and the carvings on the wall. But when we looked outside the cave, there was this about a coffee table sized rock, and it had looked like runes carved in it, maybe five or six lines.
Okay.
And it just didn't look like it matched what was in the cave.
That's why we're here.
Okay,
well, I appreciate your sending me that letter. I really do.
Now, I just want to let you know what you're in for tomorrow.
All right.
Okay, right off here to my right here, you see we're going to go down into this wash.
So we're going right up this way here, right?
Yeah, that green, that green ribbon.
Okay.
It's pretty much of a rock-strewn scree, so you take one step up and two back.
It's going to be hot tomorrow, isn't it?
Yeah, I saw they were saying it's going to be 99 degrees tomorrow.
99.
Okay, so I advise early, so we can start up there, get away from the heat, and it'd be much more pleasant to walk.
Okay.
See you tomorrow, Scott.
Thank you.
all set, bud?
I think I'm ready. Who's your friend?
Steve is the state archaeologist for Arizona.
Scott Walter, nice to meet you, Steve. Thanks for coming out.
You bet.
So, have you been here before?
I was here, luckily, these guys called me, told me that they had located this cave. We thought it was important to come down and take a look and see what was going on. We found out that it was recorded with an Arizona State Museum site number in 1984.
Well, I'm kind of anxious to see it.
Let's get going.
All right, I'm in. Let's go.
All right.
Let's head for the cave.
There it is, cave. Scott.
Right here?
Right there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, look at that. Yep. Wow, those are rooms, all right. Wow. That is a Christian-style cross, for sure. And these sure look like runes. That's an R. Not sure what that is. That looks like an S. So I'm not sure. Those don't look like Scandinavian runes. It might be Anglo-Saxon, but you know what? I have an idea. I know a guy who knows something about runes. He knows a lot about runes. I'll send a picture to Mike. Weathering is key, obviously, and that's what I'm trying to get a sense of. You know, they look kind of fresh to me. I mean, this Spalding here, I don't see any weathering of that. If this was exposed for a long time and the calcite was deposited on this open surface, you know, that process should continue and you would probably see it there.
What I do know is this area was recorded as an archaeological site in 1984.
Okay.
And even though they recorded a lot of the petroglyphs and pictographs that is in this cave here, they didn't say anything about this boulder out in front of the cave that had these rune writings on it.
Okay.
So my guess is it may not have existed prior to 1984. Mm-hmm. So the true mystery really is, you know, who put it in here and why, and what does it really say?
Is it possible they just didn't record it?
No, because usually when they record an arch site, whether there's prehistoric artifacts or historic artifacts, or even if they find any paleontological stuff, they will record everything there because it's all part of the site.
This is my handy portable microscope. Here's your lens. See how light that is? That's where the chisel hit the rock, and that's where it spalled off. Well, that's cool, but let's see what else is here. Do you see this?
What's that?
Steve,
break
do you see
along
this
along?
Here? Right here? It's over on the other side, too. Look at this. See these rock fragments here? And the water was running down here, and it was dissolving out the limestone. And it looks like it cemented these rock fragments here. And it connects over there. There was material here.
It does look like this has been dug out, and that boulder didn't move. You know, that maybe that's why in 84 they didn't see it. If this was still covered up and then somebody dug it out since then.
It was uncovered. That could explain why there's no weathering.
Excuse me, one sec.
My phone vibrated here. I think maybe it's Mike here. Let me check. He thinks it might be a memorial stone?
Huh.
He's got to do some more work on the translation, but a gravestone. A gravestone? Everything about it, including its placement outside the mouth of the cave, reminds me of the stones throughout Europe used to memorialize the dead.
That's interesting, isn't it? It is, yeah. There could potentially
be something in that inscription that identifies a family, a clan, a person, something. You know, if this is a grave marker, we could have a body right here. He says it looks like a memorial stone, a gravestone, a gravestone. Well, that makes some sense. And it's got that Christian cross.
It does have the cross on there. That's perfect for a gravestone.
That's absolutely would be on a memorial stone. He's probably right.
Makes a lot of sense.
He says he'll get back with more on the inscription, but the material that's welded on the side of the cave tells us clearly that a lot of material's been moved or dug out. Maybe we had a body here.
We may have if somebody had been buried up here and then somebody wrote the inscription. But as you can see, a lot of it's been removed.
But we still have, we still have some material here.
This looks like somebody has actually dug it out, you're right, and piled everything on that side. And that's a typical example of vandalism. People come out and they find archaeological sites, and the first thing they want to do is start digging. And you know, if they start at the front of a structure like this, they think they might find something, and a lot of times they don't find anything. The only thing that we know of that is here are some very interesting pictographs and petroglyphs.
These spirals here. These are really interesting. You know what this strikes me as? Because I've seen these spirals before. It reminds me of a star map. We saw them down in Georgia, and I've seen them in other places.
Yeah, good. Archaeoastronomy, that's a big field these days.
I know that spirals often mimic something that the ancients felt very strongly about, and that's sacred geometry.
Sure.
And, you know, we see it all over the place. Most people don't realize it. It's how a plant grows, it's how a shell grows, and it's really a mathematical equation, and it's how our faces grow. We know that there are cultures all around the world that did similar things, and so it begs the question, at least to me, was this all done independently? I mean, obviously, they're all looking at stars, but was there also maybe some exchange of information? I don't know.
Well, depends on how far back you go. If you're going back, 8, 10, 12,000 years as people migrated through, they brought that knowledge with them. So either they migrated down from the north or they, came across the oceans and migrated from the south. I mean, there's both those theories out there.
Sure, sure. And if there's contact whenever it happened, this would be something they would have in common. Look at that hole back there. That cave keeps going.
Yeah.
Let me take a look there. Well, I'm not gonna fit in there. I can't get in here. Is there anybody else?
Okay, Jimmy can try it.
All right, Jim.
Jim, you up for it?
All right.
Jim's up for it.
Just be careful in there.
Yeah, be careful. Do you have a flashlight or something?
Yeah, I got a flashlight, but I'm going to have to...
If you hear anything rattling, make sure you stop and come back out real fast.
Yeah, it's nice and cool in there. Cool. He's in there waiting.
We might have our body after all, right?
Right. Hey, ghostly sounds. Here, I'll hold it. If you hear any rattling noises, stop and look and...
Move back.
Jim? It's nice knowing you.
Oh, yeah.
There are bees in here.
Is it a hive?
I don't know what's in there, but there are bees in here. Wow. That's a hole right up. God damn. There's bees in there, bud.
You all right there?
Yeah, I'm all right.
All right. Man taking one for the team.
So, Jim, would a body fit in there?
Yes, it would.
It would, okay. How high was it?
I'd say about 8 feet.
Okay.
And it goes up on a slant like this.
Okay.
And then goes up and then it kind of stops just like this right here with holes all over the place.
You didn't see any bones or anything in there?
No bones.
Okay. I mean, there's a couple thoughts. One is, could there be some other archaeological remains that might tell us something? And would it be worthwhile going through that material that we're assuming, I'm assuming, maybe you are, that they moved that material out there? Would it be worth going through that? Is there any chance we could do a dig here?
There's always a chance you can do a dig, but it's a very lengthy permitting process.
Really?
So you have to get a permit, an Antiquities Act permit. You have to get, and you have to have a qualified archaeologist to actually be on the permit. And then you have to hire the crew, and, you know, okay. There's always that possibility.
Okay.
But, you know, it does take some time to get all the permits in order.
Let's say we did a dig here, and we found something that indicated a European presence, pre-Columbia. Mm-hmm. I think you would agree that would be a historic discovery.
I think it would be very historic, because especially with the inscription here, to find some human remains that are associated with these would be very significant.
We have multiple lines of evidence. We've got evidence of digging. Clearly, there was material here. The lack of weathering that bothered me at first could be explained by the fact that it was simply buried.
It could have been.
We've got a dry climate here. You know, we've got enough here that if we were to find something from a dig, it would be potentially a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Somebody carved that into this rock because they really cared for the person enough to do something like that. They didn't just bury him out in the desert someplace and walk away.
Another thought, in the testing business, which is what I do for a living, we do ground penetrating radar mm-hmm. on concrete all the time, and would that work here, and could we do that?
Look, ground penetrating radar isn't really ground disturbance. It's just moving some piece of machinery, electronic machinery, across the surface to see if you can pick up any kind of anomaly, so I don't see a problem with that.
I mean, maybe it's worth going through the process. Yeah. I mean, we've got a lot of things here that are adding up to something that might be worthwhile. Mike, you've got a name? So you're telling me we might really have a dead Englishman from the 12th century buried up in the Mustang Mountains? We thought the last time we were here there might be a body. Guys, I have something to tell you. I've been sitting on this all morning. I got a translation from Mike. And I wanted to wait till I got up here so I could see it and read it and so we could do this together. I'm going to read this to you, but the other thing that he did say is we know for sure that it's 12th century English. So we've got that for sure. But here we go. Line one, the body, in parentheses, he has in contrast with the soul, Fitz lays rough Hurric here. He enjoyed, in parentheses, entertainment, joy, merriment, maybe means a good life. The secret stolen at the end of this line. Rough Hurric's body, fame and glory. Dust beyond Eden, Eden's temple. There's a name here. This is,
sounds like a memorial.
This is absolutely a memorial. And then, of course, we have the Christian cross here. I don't know what else it could be.
Well, yeah, 12th century. Why would somebody carve something like this that's got 12th century letters and everything when we don't have any history of anybody else other than Native Americans being here up until, you know, 15, 16, 1700?
So your initial reaction is this is not 800 years old.
Probably not.
Okay.
Probably not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's fine. That's fair. I hope we can prove you wrong.
Me too. Yeah.
You know, you really have two working hypotheses here. You've got somebody messing around relatively recently, or we've got something here that absolutely changes history in a profound way.
If there were Europeans out here in the 12th century, it does change history profoundly.
I like this. I'm getting intrigued.
It's an interesting story. I like the story. I mean, I'm always open-minded about different things, and especially something that's absolutely new like this that would really change, some of the history.
Brad, we brought you here for a reason. What can we do here today?
Well, we'll definitely try to scan out in front of the memorial here, and then we're going to do a couple scans back into the cave.
Okay.
Looking for any kind of disturbances in the soil.
If there's anything left, Brad, you're the man. Brad, you're fired up. Looks like it's running. Can you just explain to me how this works?
Basically, what we're going to do is we're going to scan over an area.
Okay.
Basically, the radar is going to shoot down at 45-degree angles, okay? As we move along, basically, it's going to keep shooting those 45-degree angles down.
Okay.
As we pass over, anything that may be in the ground is going to show up on our screen here.
Okay. Can you tell by looking at this whether it's metal, whether it's rock, whether it's plastic?
If it's metal, it's going to show up bright white on the screen.
Okay.
If it's plastic or any other material, it's going to show up as a very faint line on the screen.
All right, do your thing. Explain to me, it looks like we have a linear feature here. Is that the surface?
That's the depth that we're actually getting with the radar.
Okay, what is this little dip in the middle here?
That's just rock, debris that could be in the ground.
So if I can cut to the chase, are you telling me you didn't really see anything, did you?
Not on the first pass. We have to do multiple passes. Anytime you scan anything with GPR, you definitely want to do multiple passes.
All right.
So we're going to back it up, we're going to do it again. Right in this area, if we go from here on back, is where we're seeing that density change in the ground.
Right here, right? That light area?
Yeah. So basically from here back is where we're going to find that area where we had the density change.
Okay. So what you're saying is that could be something.
It could be, because there's definitely a density change that we've picked up on every pass that we've had.
Well, I like that. And we've made, what, 3 passes, and we got that same anomaly here. So do we need to do more passes, or do we want to try out on the berm there?
Let's try scanning out here and see what we get out there.
Okay. That's an anomaly too. Same thing, the same spot?
It's pretty close to the same spot.
Right about there?
Maybe a little bit more.
So there's something here.
Yeah.
Well, it's consistent. It kept hitting in the same spot. Goes at least to here, right?
Correct.
Okay, all right. Hey, Steve, do you have a sec?
What'd you find?
Well, Brad, you thought, I saw the density change, and it's at the same spot, so it's going across here, right?
Yeah, there's definitely an anomaly in the surface.
Okay, so it's going in a linear fashion. You know, we've all been to a cemetery, right? And the headstone is at the head end, typically.
Right.
Okay. They lay the body perpendicular to the stone, right?
This good.
Way. How far down?
It was about 3 to 4 feet.
3 to 4 feet.
3 to 4 feet.
Okay.
And it goes out to about 2 foot.
About where your foot is,
uh-huh. Right?
So about 2.5, 3 feet. Yeah.
Okay. Obviously, we're not going to dig with a shovel, but I mean, we've got a legitimate chance of something really major.
I think we can certainly move forward in looking for future investigations and seeing what else is here, because this is a very interesting site out here.
Right.
We also have something that could be not, I don't want to say modern, but it could be some almost prehistoric Anglo-American that might have been out here.
Possibly pre-Columbian.
Pre-Columbian.
Right, right. Just a sec here. Oops, I get another. Guys, I got an email from Mike. Guess what? Hurech's surname, he found it in England. How about that?
Incredible.
Wow. I guess I'm going to the UK.
There is one more thing. Mike says I need to go to the Gila Cliff Dwellings in New Mexico. I wonder what's there. There's evidence of a medieval Englishman buried in Arizona way before Columbus was ever here. I'm finding answers.
Pretty impressive, aren't they?
Oh, amazing.
Scott Walter.
Scott, Steve Riley, superintendent for the monument. How are you today?
Nice to meet you.
Good to meet
doing
you.
Doing great.
What you're looking at is three of the five cliff dwellings. They date back to about 1284, 1285 when they first started construction. And they were abandoned by about 1320 to 1330.
Okay.
So one generation or a little more occupied.
Well, this may seem a little strange, but I just came from a site in Arizona in the Mustang Mountains. It was up at the top of a large bluff. There was a cave there, and there's some talk about a body possibly being there of somebody who could have come from Europe, from the British Isles, back about this same time, believe it or not. And a friend of mine suggested I come here, and I'm wondering, do you have any thoughts?
Well, we have not found any relics here to that period of European settlement. Okay. Everything that came out of here has been dated back to the Native American.
Okay.
Scott, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How
are
you?
A long time since I saw you.
Yeah.
How's Jenna?
She's doing great. How about Kate?
Oh, she's absolutely fine.
Jeez, you're
great to see you.
You're looking awful skinny, pal.
Oh, yes, yes. I'm wasting away, you know.
You look great. So let me ask you this. What have you learned about our friend, Mr. Ruff Hurick?
I've been doing some investigation at the county records office, and I've found some information out about a Peter Hurick. There's more information to come, and the lady at the office said she'd get back to me by 4 this afternoon.
You know, Alan, it's incredible. We've got this name Hurick on a boulder in a cave in Arizona in the U.S., and it brings us back here to the U.K.
Absolutely.
It's amazing.
It's amazing, but not as amazing as what I'm going to show you now. Just come with me.
Let me grab my backpack. We'll head out here.
Still you was in the backpack?
I got my whole life in here. You know that. On the inscription, it says Ruff Hurick, but you said Peter Hurick.
Yeah, I thought about that, actually. And it occurred to me, you know, in those days, it was quite common for people not to be known by their real Christian name, but often by a nickname. So I think the word Ruff is probably an adjective. I mean, think where they were, out in those mountains.
You know? Yeah, yeah.
This guy was probably a bit of a bruiser. Maybe this was the guy that personally wrestled the buffaloes to the ground. And at that time, especially in Britain, nicknames were very, very common. In fact, they were much more common than proper names, and often even used on documents, so...
Really?
Yes, it was quite a common thing.
Ah, sandstone.
Yes, I wonder if it just starts to look somehow slightly familiar. So there you are, Scott. What about that?
Wow. Now I see why you and Mike wanted me to see this. This is reminiscent of what we saw at the Gila cliff dwellings in New Mexico. Incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, look at how it's carved out, beautiful, these rooms. You know, we know we have Ruff Hurech, or Peter Hurech, if that's who it is, carved on a stone in New Mexico. Dates to about the 1200s. This goes back at least that far, or do we know for sure?
At least, we think at least 1500, but it's quite likely that there were people here before that.
Well, okay, so now what I'm thinking is this architecture that looks so much like what we saw in New Mexico, did Hurech bring it over there and educate the natives, or did somebody come back, he's still there, and, you know, bring it here?
I guess we'll never know, but the one thing we can be sure about is the contemporary nature, you know, of the timing. It's hardly likely to be a coincidence.
No, no, there's too many coincidences for this to be a coincidence.
And there's something else interesting about these, of course, as well. This is reputed to be the place that J.R.R. Tolkien used when he devised his hobbit houses.
Ah, okay, so these are the hobbit houses.
Absolutely.
Why not?
I've got one more surprise for you. I know from the County Records Office exactly where Peter Hurech lived.
Around here?
And it's still here, and it's only 5 minutes away.
There's a runestone outside a cave in the middle of the Arizona desert. It seems to be an epitaph for an Englishman from 1200 AD. Could he have made a voyage to America hundreds of years before Columbus? I've traced his roots here to Staffordshire, England.
It's a pub?
Yeah. The lady at the county office told me it was a manor house right back to the 1200s. Oh. And that's where Peter de Hurech lived.
So this is Hurech's house, I guess.
Absolutely, and it's a pub, and that's why he was Rough Peter de Hurech.
Perfect.
Alan, those cave dwellings were amazing. And you know what I think probably happened there? I mean, you've got these beautiful sandstone bluffs that were there at one time. And when people first came, they probably were hollowed out a little bit, and they just took advantage and dug them out even more. The architecture is very similar to what I saw at the Gila dwellings. But the one thing that's troubling me here is, you know, they talk about at least 1500s. For this site, they have to be older than that.
I don't think, Scott, that there's any doubt about it whatsoever. And I would be stunned if those rock dwellings were not much older.
Oh, I'm certain that they are. Okay.
I've got a text coming in. I wonder if it's... Oh, yes, it's from the Staffordshire Records Office. Hi, Alan. I'm afraid I couldn't find any records for the Hurech family after around 1200.
After 1200. Mm. Actually, not finding that name in the records supports what we saw in Arizona. He would be the one to carry on the name, but if he never came back, which appears to be the case based on the memorial, that's why the name died out.
The name disappears.
That's consistent with our story.
Absolutely.
That makes sense that this actually did happen.
Yes, because it would have died where he died. And of course, it could never have appeared in the records again.
You know, this brings the question that has been burning in my brain is, why would he come all this way to the desert region of the southwest of what is now the United States? To me, what makes sense, we know down in that area we have lead mines, we have silver mines, we have copper mines. Perhaps it was mineral, maybe it was wealth.
And maybe it was adventure. I mean, I've always believed, ever since I've been researching of this situation, that every man and his dog from England knew that America was there. The fishermen, for example, from Bristol, which is not too far from here, they used to fish on the Grand Banks off Newfoundland. They must have known that America was there, and lots of other people besides. But of course, you don't kill a goose that's laying a golden egg if you know that there are big opportunities over the pond.
And resources.
And resources. You're not going to run around the country telling anybody else that they're there.
We certainly have the motivation, plenty of motivation. It would have been done in secret. And this boulder with his name is really the only evidence that we have that he made this trip. Okay, well, let's take a look at what we have here. We've got a surname, Hurick, both carved on a boulder in Arizona and here. Yeah. And we've got a runic inscription carved in Anglo-Saxon runes in a cave down there. And certainly this is where they were used at this time. I mean, it seems to me we have a very compelling case that's coming together here. This man came over to America prior to Christopher Columbus. And this would just be another example of the many examples that I'm aware of cultures coming to North America prior to 1492.
And I have to say, as a historian, having looked at this closely, for my money, on a balance of probabilities, I think we're talking about the man who came from here, who probably sat in this very manor house we're sitting in now, and who ended up all those miles away. And for that reason alone, I think we ought to propose a toast to Peter.
To Peter. My investigation into a mysterious runestone in the Mustang Mountains has turned up evidence that a 12th century Englishman could be buried in the Arizona desert. An archaeological dig could reveal even more. If there's a man buried there, I wonder what his journey to America must have been like, what he came here for so long ago. I think he was just one of many people who came to America long before 1492. Columbus wasn't the first European to discover America. He was just the first to get credit for it. And that's what I'm trying to change.